This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back. Your home for everything sports, Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. I'm your co-host, Scott Coscola. Hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving and a nice long, extra long weekend. A lot of football to talk about, a little baseball to talk about, some rumblings in Beantown that kind of shocked some people, and maybe more to come. Who knows? Big college football weekend, we'll talk about that. Since we were last on, a big fight occurred. In fact, I'm watching the replay of it now. And a big upset in boxing over the weekend also. So we got a lot to talk about, but let's just forget the rigmarole and dive in. They just came back from the dunk. Another brilliant performance for Chris Dunn and a Friars win over the Hawks of Hatfield. Cowboy, Roger Morissette.
Tapping in, Scott.
How are you, sir?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Looking forward to doing a little sports talking today.
Yes, good to see you this weekend, my friend.
Yes, you as well. And it was thank you for delivering the pass on the greatest play of my life.
I delivered a lot. I never threw. I mean, combined you and Mr. Azzaro, I think all my touchdown passes went to you two, and all my picks went to what was that, Brian? Is that the kid that was playing safety?
Yes.
I threw like a Neil O'Donnell interception in that game on Sunday. Yeah.
we had a good time, and
it was a lot of fun.
You told me I ran like I was stealing a loaf of bread, which
you were like in this crazy hunch, like you were about to, like, you know, like the bushwhacker headbutt to the gut, but you know what, you scored. That's all that mattered.
It was effective.
Exactly. Good to have you on as always, my friend. Another guy who was at the dunk tonight, Cowboy Senior. How's it going?
Hey, what's happening, Scott? Great night at the dunk. Saw the best player in Division I college basketball get a triple double tonight, Chris Dunn.
I concur.
And
concur
with you. A lot of exciting things going on. So we got a lot to be excited about.
We do.
Around here.
We do.
Good time.
Yes. We'll talk some Sox, and we will talk Sunday night. You might be a little forlorn, but that's okay. This isn't college football where wins mean that much in the regular season, and I'll get into my college football rant later. But another guy with us this evening who will be pleased about the Sox news that happened this week, Keith Schmidt. What's up, Schmitty?
Not much, Scott. How you doing?
Good. Man, I'm pumped. It's been these vacation weeks. They kind of build, and it was actually it's good that we're doing a show this week because it was a big weekend in sports. So why don't we do – normally we dive into NFL first, but while we got everybody here, let's talk about this big news that happened from Fenway, and that is that the Boston Red Sox, who we all know and we've talked about it ad nauseum, had probably one of the worst starting rotations in all of Major League Baseball in 2015. So one thing that needed to be fixed this offseason was certainly that, and they did that in a big way as they signed left-hander David Price – 7 years, $217 million, which is $7 million more than the first big signing of the free agent period, and that was the Detroit Tigers signing, and this makes me feel good because that just weakens one of my rivals, former Washington Nationals starter Jordan Zimmermann. I don't know what the years were. I think that was 7 years, too. $210 million. The Sox upped that and gave David Price $217 million. And apparently there's some rumblings. I believe this was Schilling that said it on ESPN earlier today, that even with that signing, they may still be in the race for Zach Greinke. I don't know if suddenly Magic Johnson bought the Red Sox too, but that's a lot of scratch. Schmitty, your thoughts on this Price signing right out of the bat?
Well, I really like it. I would say he's probably the best starter available in this free agent class. I don't know if you consider Greinke a little better or not, but 30 years old, left-handed, throws about 95. He's got a lot of pedigree. He's got a Cy Young under his belt. He's definitely what the Red Sox need. I really like the fact that there's an opt-out clause after 3 years, a player option, because I think if you look at like the CC Sabathia contract where he opted out, I think what will happen is the Sox will basically have signed Price for a 3-year, $93 million deal. He'll opt out, the Sox will move on, and they won't have to pay those last 3 years of bad pitching.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like this move.
I'm surprised they agreed to that, but I don't know if he'll opt. And maybe it depends on I don't know if the money was backloaded or.
It's no deferred money. It's 31 a year.
Straight through.
Straight through. But he has the option to opt out after 3 if he'd like.
I don't know if he will. Well, I guess it depends on how these 3 years go.
Yeah, well, if he wins two Cy Young Awards in those 3 years, then most likely he'll end up opting out.
And, you know, presumably contracts are just going to keep going up. So
right.
his 31 3 years from now is going to be – it'll still be a lot, but it won't be the most likely, right? So if he's still a good quality top-of-the-rotation starter, he probably wants to cash in on that last real big deal after 3 years.
I agree. And hopefully the Red Sox will have the discipline to walk away.
Right. And the only way it bites him, obviously, is if he shits the bed and doesn't opt out. But I think he's too good of a pitcher for that.
I agree. I think he's good. And, you know, five years out of that seven, he'll be worth it.
What do you think, Senior?
I mean, I was thrilled. When you look at what their options were, you put yourself in Dombrowski's shoes. You get a job with a team that just is a big market team that inexcusably just finished in last place 2 years in a row. Really, the way Major League Baseball is set up, where there's the haves and the have-nots. If you're one of the haves, which the Red Sox certainly are, you can't be finishing in last place 2 years in a row.
Right.
And obviously the reason is you look at the pitching. So he's going to fix the pitching staff, and he's off to a great start. He's going to have to fix the bullpen. He started that by trading for arguably the best closer in the game, Craig Kimbrell.
Mm-hmm.
Now you look at what are his options in getting a starter. Johnny Cueto, 32-year-old Zach Greinke, 30-year-old David Price, who is still at the very top of his game. This past year just went, I believe, 18-5 with a 2.45 ERA in the American League, won the American League ERA title, carried that Blue Jay pitching staff on his back. He's proven his whole career that he can pitch in the AL East. That's where he's been. If you look at, and I'm going to come very close. I'm going to give you a ballpark because I saw it, and I'm not going to tell you I'm exact to the number, but his ERA in his career since 2008, which is his career, at Fenway Park, is, I believe, 1.78.
Yeah.
The second best ERA in Major League Baseball at Fenway Park in that same period of time is at about 3.5, about double.
Mm.
So he can pitch in Fenway. I mean, we got all these factors added up. The only other option Dombrowski had besides a free agent was to trade, and they explored trading for Chris Sale or Sonny Gray. And the packages that these teams, and rightfully so, the teams would have demanded – would have been either Xander Bogaerts or Mookie Betts and prospects. Giving all that up, obviously, your best, especially having to give up the proven young star. I mean, we want to see these two guys stay in Boston. The best thing he could do was sign David Price. That's what he did. It's a huge contract, and with that comes risk, because obviously if he fails in these first three years and doesn't opt out, you're saddled with a big contract. So there's risk, but man, with the way this guy's performed, I think you're willing to take that risk, and I think you think he's going to opt out. And it's a little correction on, I mean, it's way more than the Jordan Zimmerman contract. Jordan Zimmerman signed for $110 million for 5 years, not $210. So, I mean, it's a huge contract, but he's by far the best pitcher that was available. So.
Mm.
You take the risk, and hopefully it works out. And I know there's a history of these contracts not working out. The one that I want to look at would be the Yankees with CC. And the Yankees with CC would have been the best long-term contract free agent signing in history, probably. He was really good. The mistake the Yankees made was when he opted out, they shouldn't have re-upped him.
Right.
If they would have just let him walk at that point, he would have been a huge success, where most, I know, almost every long-term free agent pitcher signing hasn't been a success. You can go all the way back to Kevin Brown. Most of them have been disasters, but I can see this being a success. He's still only 30 years old. Greinke just opted out of his contract at 32. Price is going to reach his opt-out year at 33. Pretty similar. He opts out, and I think at that point you let him walk, and you got three great years out of the guy, and now hopefully a guy like Erod has developed, and hopefully, and at that point, if you got to go get another free agent, you do what you got to do. But that's the way I see it, and I can't wait till opening day as a Red Sox fan to have David Price walking out to the mound.
So Keith and Senior, you know, the flip side to this, and I just would like your thoughts, is his, I mean, it's a pretty glaring thing, his postseason struggles. And you just made him the highest paid pitcher in baseball history. What are both of your thoughts on that?
I'll be happy to answer to that. Number one, just the fact that we're talking about that without getting him, the Red Sox were a last place team. They weren't talking about the postseason. As soon as you sign David Price, we're talking about the postseason again because it's in the realm of possibility. So getting there is big. And this year, if you look strictly at numbers, you say that, okay, struggled in the postseason. But if you watch the games, I'm going to say, and I'm not going to say it's John Gibbons' fault. It's partially that the Blue Jays had no bullpen, but he pitched really, really well and eventually got whacked in the late innings of these games where I couldn't believe they were leaving him in, especially that last start. I mean, he was fabulous. And I think it was either the seventh or the eighth inning they just let him get whacked. I mean, at that point, if he would have been pitching for the Royals this year, he might have won the MVP of the postseason because they would have got him out in time. So,
yeah, I mean, I remember games.
I'm sure you all watched that last game that he pitched. He was incredible.
Yeah.
And then he lost it. And you're supposed to go get the guy. Hello. Nobody in Boston blames Pedro Martinez for the famous Grady Little game. They blame Grady Little for not coming and get him. You know?
Right.
So, and again,
I remember it was more game two. They had a 3-0 lead, and then that seventh inning he fell apart. I think it was game seven, he was really good till like the eighth, and then remember what's his name? Which one of those mashers? Bautista tied it, and then their bullpen fell apart in the ninth inning. But yeah,
not like the guy went out there and laid an egg in the postseason.
No, absolutely not.
He didn't. If you would have got him out of games earlier, his numbers would have looked fabulous.
Yep.
Unfortunately for him, Toronto had no bullpen. Now, hopefully, Dave Dombrowski is going to rebuild our bullpen. The toughest thing to do, obviously, is get the closer. He already did that. Now, a few more tweaks, and you have a reasonable bullpen. And especially in the postseason, the guy starts losing it, you get him out of the game. I mean, his numbers could have looked a whole lot better. It's not like I said, he went out there like a punching bag and got knocked out in the second inning or something. It was nothing like that. He pitched really well.
You talked about Kimbrel, and we talked about Price, and obviously there's a possibility of another starter. I don't know if they'll go after Greinke. I mean, that's a lot of money. You're talking Dodger Kimbrel at that
point. I don't see that happening.
No, I don't see that either. But let's be honest, Price is great, but the rest of that rotation still stinks. I mean, Erod definitely a two. I mean, is he probably the two right now?
I'd like to see him develop another pitch.
Yeah,
if he develops a changeup, he has the potential to be a two. But if you're just going fastball slider, I mean, there aren't many people not named Chris Sale that have success with just two pitches.
Right.
I mean, he is still a good pitcher. He's in the works, but yeah. He definitely has to get that third pitch going.
Yeah.
Rick Porcello, Buckholz.
Buckholz is healthy, he's a two.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
And how about the way Joe Kelly pitched at the end of the season
Joe
when
Kelly
he came back up?
Yeah.
And also, I mean, even if they don't go get Zach Greinke, which I don't think they will either. I mean, that's insane. But that doesn't mean that we're done. That doesn't mean that Dave Dombrowski's done. That doesn't mean he's not going to go out and, you know, spend some prospects and maybe one of the guys we just mentioned and get a solid number two starter. That could still very well happen.
With Price in the rotation now, you got Price in the rotation, you got Miley in the rotation. Possibly
Porcello, definitely.
Eddie Rodriguez and Henry Owens, you got four potential lefties. I mean, I could see them packaging Eddie and Henry Owens for an established guy, like a Sonny Gray.
That's entirely possible.
Billy Beane's, you know, ears right up if you offered those two guys.
You might have to
never know. I definitely see one of those two expendable now, either Rodriguez or Owens, and their stock is fairly high. So,
yeah, now those of us who watch the end of the Sox season, Keith, how about Joe Kelly?
Oh, he came when he came back up from the minors.
He got injured at the end. He pitched really, really well.
Yeah, he seemed to figure it out, which, I mean, that was a good sign. I mean, I still envision Joe Kelly almost as a Wade Davis type. If they brought him in the late seventh, eighth inning role, and he could just let it rip, 98, 99.
He was also using his other pitches.
True.
About him out of the bullpen is I worry a little bit about the control. But, I mean, maybe he could gain some more command. I mean, he's still young.
Well, I don't know why, but he reminds me a lot of Wade Davis. He's got filthy, filthy stuff, but as a starter, it just, you know, it didn't work for Davis. But like you said, that whole last, you know, month and a half.
Yeah, it was one good start after another.
Yeah. His ERA was in the twos. But Cowboy, the question you asked earlier, he's got seven losses in the postseason. Do you know who he tied for the most losses?
Who was that, Keith?
That would be Randy Johnson. Most
losses. Another good lefty
who ended up rebounding and being an excellent postseason pitcher. Yep. You know,
I can give you another name of a guy who struggled in his career in the postseason and then put it together later, Roger Clemens.
Yep.
So it's happened before. Some of it is – and again, I don't think he pitched bad in the postseason this year. And to be honest with you, if the Sox get to the postseason, I would have no problem with rolling David Price out there in the first game of the postseason. I wouldn't have any problem with it at all.
And on a side note, reading a piece here on ESPN, Big Poppy, I mean, this is a big special year for the Red Sox because obviously he'll be on his farewell tour in 2016. Him and Price have a little history going back to the 2013 AL Division Series.
Poppy already came out and said it's water under the dam.
Yep, no, I know.
Doesn't matter.
Yep, I was getting to that. I just wanted to document what the issues were. But, yes, he says it's all good. You know what? There's always heat of the moment stuff. So,
Now Poppy will love it when Jose Bautista does a bat flip and the next time he comes up, Price drills him.
Yep. And the other signing for the Red Sox, not as big, but they signed Chris Young away from the Yankees, 2 years, $13 million, good fourth outfielder, solid guy. If he's hot, he could bounce balls off the monster. So that's a good signing. So the Red Sox made a few good moves. Dombrowski said that the major moves are done, but I agree with Schmitty. I have a feeling that there might be – maybe there's no more financial moves, but I do think there might be a trade in the works. We'll see.
I'd like to see him sign Mike Leake. I really, really like Mike Leake.
Mike Leake traded during the deadline, right? He was with the Reds, and he was traded to
finished up with the Giants.
San Francisco. Yeah.
He's solid, man. You guaranteed six innings. He's got a pretty low ERA. I really like him, and I don't think
he's used to pitching in a hitter's park too, which is
in Cincinnati, right? That was like a launching pad.
So. Yeah. Some other baseball notes. This is more coaching moves. The Mets actually lost their bench coach today. Bob Guerin left the Mets to go to the Dodgers to be Dave Roberts' bench coach. Two moves that are very interesting. Don Mattingly, who's now, of course, the manager of the Marlins, in my opinion, went from one awful setup to another awful setup. Because now the rumors seem to be swirling that the next Marlins hitting coach could be one Barry Bonds. I don't know if that's just to put people in that cavernous new ballpark that no one goes to, or if they actually think the guy could give hitting tips. I feel bad for Mattingly. That poor guy can never get into a situation that's his. Shouldn't he be able to pick his own staff instead of this ludicrous front office in Miami giving guys like this to him? I mean, it makes no sense to me whatsoever. I mean,
Well, it'll be a media circus, but I mean, you know, Barry Bonds, one of the greatest hitters that ever lived. So,
True.
You know, minus the whole juice and stuff.
Right.
I mean, the guy was still a great hitter.
He was a great hitter.
So,
I mean, so well, I'll be.
I mean, frankly, I think it's been a shame that Bonds has been out of the game for so long. Obviously the steroid thing, but you know, for him, I mean, he was still productive when the Giants just let him go and no one would sign him. And I thought it left a little sour taste in my mouth. You get a guy like A-Rod, basically did the same thing, who gets to have his nice little farewell tour, and Bonds is blackballed. So I'm happy for Barry Bonds. And I think, you know, Marlins are a young team. And like Keith said, if Bonds can, if he can exude half of his knowledge about hitting to these young kids, I mean, he's got to help them, right? I mean,
right.
See him working with Yelich, and you know, hell, could Stanton get any better with a few tips from Bonds? Whew, that'd be scary. But
let's hope the tips are on the up and up.
Yeah. Oh, I don't think Stanton needs any juice. Jeez.
That is true. That is true.
I'd like to see how Mattingly fares with this team, because this is a young team, hungry team. These guys aren't all rich, you know, like the Dodgers. That was like, you know, being a giant babysitter with all those big payrolls.
Yeah, you know, and most of the money was to guys who were past their prime. That was the worst, and that was just as big a deal too. The other
move, he's got arguably the best pitcher in the major leagues, which is nice.
Had.
Did they trade him?
You're talking about Kershaw? Or are you talking about Jose Fernandez? Oh,
Jose Fernandez.
He's there.
I was going to say, I don't think I was under a rock.
No.
He's just as good as any of them, Keith.
Oh, yeah, he's very good. And he's only 20 years old, 21 maybe, something like that. But yeah. I've been hearing rumblings that he wants out of Miami. So who knows? Maybe he'll be coming to Boston.
So bring him in, baby.
Bring him in. Hey, throw Stanton in there with him.
That's funny. And another guy who's always had a cloud over his head, Mark McGwire, was the Dodgers staff. He is now in San Diego with the Padres. So that's good. At least Mark McGwire is in low-profile places. No one really thinks about him. So we'll talk more baseball, of course, throughout the offseason. We'll have our man Joel Barnhart back on as well. All right, let's get into America's other pastime. Thanksgiving is always a fun weekend in the National Football League, and we had three games on Thursday. Two of them were ugly dumpster fires, both involving NFC East teams. The Lions, I don't think the Lions have looked this good on Thanksgiving since Barry Sanders, maybe even before that. They mollywomped the Eagles 45-14, and then Carolina did what they should have done, which is take care of my decrepit Cowboys. I don't even remember what the final was. I think it was 33-14. They're just a mess. And then the shocking game of the day, after Brett Favre's number 4 was dropped from the rafters at Lambeau Field, or rafters on the side of the stadium, I suppose. The Bears go in there and win 17-13, and the Packers are struggling. And as we get into, guys, week 13 of the NFL, before we do that, though, of course, the biggest game, of course, that occurred here on our show was L number 1. For the New England Patriots, who lose 30-24 in overtime on Sunday night to Brock, not Lesnar, Brock and the Broncos.
The Zebras.
And the Zebras. We are on limited time for a few guys. So, Senior, the floor is yours.
Okay. I'm going to tell you that right now, in my philosophy, if I was managing the Patriots, is make sure you get people healthy for the playoffs. Don't force feed anybody out there. After that game Sunday night, in all honesty, I don't care. I wouldn't risk people to get home field advantage. If they go into the playoffs reasonably healthy or healthy, I don't care. I wouldn't care if they have to travel, because that game showed me that the toughest place to go would be Denver in the AFC. And if the Patriots were anywhere near full strength, I can't see them having any trouble with Denver. I mean, this was like a minor league Patriot team out there. Really, they didn't have any wide. They only, there was JoJo LaFell and this kid Harper, who really cost them the game with that fumbled punt. Until then, they were in complete control of the game up by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter and getting the ball. Notice he got released. Now he's back with the practice squad for his role in the defeat. But I mean, with all that, with the team that they went out there with, really with no offense, then they lose Hightower during the game. So now no Hightower and no Jamie Collins, so no run defense. All those things added up, and Denver still had to go to overtime to beat them in Denver. So to me, honestly, it's all about getting healthy for the playoffs, and I would see them just rolling through the AFC. I don't care if they have to travel. Obviously, teams come to New England, forget it. It's over. I wouldn't rush Gronk back. You know, that injury looked bad when it happened. Now we're hearing it's not so bad, so that's good. I wouldn't rush anybody back. I mean, we should almost be encouraged by that game as Patriot fans. It took a crazy fumble. It took some really iffy calls by the officials. Like obviously, the offensive pass interference on Gronk and the defensive holding in the end zone that was really just laying a hand on the guy and all sorts of other stuff for the Broncos to beat this basically JV Patriot team in overtime. So I'm really, as a fan, I'm really not worried about anything except the team's health. Get healthy for the playoffs, and I think you got the ticket to the Super Bowl. There's no one in the AFC that can play with them. Mm. I don't know if anybody sees this any other way, but that's what that game told me. I don't even feel that bad about the loss. I felt worse about Gronk going down and Hightower going down than I did about them losing the game. I mean, big deal. Big deal. They got a loss. They still have the best record in the conference. So
right.
That's the way I see it. I don't know if you guys see it any differently.
What do you think, Schmitty?
Go ahead, Cowboy. It was a pretty frustrating loss the way it played out. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist who thinks that anyone's on the take or anything like that. But at best, it was a horribly officiated game. Yes. Horribly. And I know Senior doesn't like to get on the officials, but I mean, I think the officials blatantly cost the Patriots the game. And that's fine, you know, and I'm with you, Senior. I'm happy they lost, because we've seen in the past that maintaining that undefeated streak and the pressure mounts and eventually, you know, things crack, and I'd rather have them crack now in week 13 than, I'm sorry, you know, week 12 than in week 19. So in a way that's good. I agree with Senior's take that they're the class of the AFC. Without Gronkowski, they're not. So I think every Patriot fan and every football fan, you know, in general, when he went down, I mean, it looked really, really bad. It looked just as bad as when Jimmy Graham went down on first look. You know, he's writhing around in pain. When you saw the replay, you saw his foot wasn't on the ground, which, you know, the first thing I said was, this might not be that bad. His foot wasn't on the ground when that happened. So overall, I feel like the referees did basically cost the Patriots the game. I was really impressed with Brady. With the drive to force overtime with literally just nobody to throw to, with Scott Chandler all the way downfield. He's the only quarterback in the league who can do that. Denver's got a top five defense. He went through them like Swiss cheese, and it's, you know, it was unfortunate. With all that said, the Patriots are very depleted right now. I think Brady's come out and talked about how pissed off he is. And Philly, you know, I've defended Philly quite a bit on this show, and I am way off the train, way off the bandwagon. I think they, right now, they may be the worst team in football. Like I on a neutral field, I don't know if I would favor them to beat anybody the way they're playing right now. Particularly on defense, the defense has just quit. I got watching that game on Thanksgiving. I thought there was a real strong possibility that Kelly would be gone within 24 hours. That's how poorly they played.
I agree.
And so Tom Brady with me, Scott Senior, and Keith at receiver beats Philly by 30 points this week. You heard it here first. Keith.
I agree. I really don't have too much more to add to that. I mean, you guys basically covered everything.
I'll line up in Gronk's spot because I don't really have that much speed, as you saw, Cowboy, but I can catch and knock guys over, so you could put me there.
You're crafty, Scott. You're crafty.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You've got as much speed as Scott Chandler.
Oh, God. All right.
One thing, Senior, the only team in the AFC that would make me, I wouldn't even say be worried, but has the best chance to beat the Patriots would be Pittsburgh if they're healthy because they can score. That's it. That'd be the only, and if they were to play, it'd be in Foxborough, so I'd still feel pretty comfortable.
And the Pats just tend to really own them. You know, I mean, and Cincy's a team that should scare us, right? I mean, they're the best. They're the second best team in the conference on both sides of the ball. Brock Osweiler's not any good. I'm sorry. I mean, I watched the guy. I mean, they're trumpeting him because, I mean, sure, he won the game, but I mean, he's playing better than Manning. But 35 other quarterbacks in the league would be playing better than Manning was. He's a bottom 10 quarterback. Cincinnati is good on both sides of the ball. They're playing well. They can run the ball. Denver ran the ball in that game, but Denver can't run the ball. I mean, they have
three quarters of the league have bottom 10 quarterbacks, which leads me to another more cerebral question later on in the show. But go ahead, Schmidt. You were going to say something?
Denver can run the ball now.
Only once Dante Hightower got knocked out. then they could run.
The week before, I'm pretty sure I said that they were going to run for $150. I think they ran for $175 against Chicago.
They did. They're running the ball better, but it's
Kubiak's system. Like I said, when Peyton was running the system, it's all pistol. That system is not designed for the shotgun. It's designed for the quarterback to be under center.
I just don't see Brock. I would have zero confidence as a Broncos fan for Brock Osweiler winning me a big game in the playoffs.
I didn't think he played that bad. I mean,
no,
Thomas didn't bring his stone hands with him. That might have been his stats would have been a little different.
Mm.
If the Patriots are healthy, they'll roll over that Denver team. Come on.
Oh, I believe. Oh, yeah, with Edelman and Amendola in there. Oh, absolutely. And a healthy Gronk. Forget.
Let's get into the Week 13 schedule, and I want to pick two games specifically because I know Senior's probably going to have to jet at the break, and so I want to get games that I specifically want his comments on. Obviously, the game that you guys were just talking about, Patriots home this week to Philly. Could this be, Senior? Has there ever been, in the Brady era, I mean, we're not talking, you know, Scott Zolak and, you know, all those other scrubs in the mid-90s, but or even before early 90s or even, you know, maybe some early Bledsoe. But is this actually a tractor pull game? Could you watch this game and like mid-third quarter go, let me see what else is on?
No, because maybe if I wasn't a Patriot fan, maybe for the rest of the country, every Eagle game the rest of the year will be a tractor pull game after what we've seen from them the last 2 weeks.
I mean, because this, I mean, mid
as a Patriot fan,
I mean,
you know,
I agree with. Oh, I understand. I'm half kidding with you, Senior. Of course, I wouldn't expect you to change the channel.
Shouldn't be any trouble.
That's my point. Like, I mean, Cowboys, right? I watched a good hunk of the, and they suck. I mean, there's nothing good top to bottom. Chip Kelly, kind of like going back old school, Senior. You'd probably remember this better than the other. Oh, Keith Schmidt might would too, but. I always like to use the example, being a Notre Dame fan, nobody loves Lou Holtz more than I do, but it's like that one blip season he coached the Jets in, I don't know, what, 78 or whatever. Chip Kelly's just not an NFL coach. I think he's better suited for college. I think these candy store offense that he had at Oregon, which was great in the Pac-12, this shit doesn't fly in the NFL. And on top of the fact, the defense is just not good.
They weren't this bad up until before the last 2 weeks.
They
I'm
quit
really
on
believing
him.
That
they
they're laying
him.
Down and getting him fired.
Yeah,
they're doing what Miami did to Joe Philbin.
Yeah,
it's like the blueprint.
Yeah,
how you get a coach fired.
It's not
it's
good.
It's so obvious that they've quit on him. I mean, it's so. I mean, they made Matt Stafford look like friggin' Joe Montana. You know,
yeah.
I mean, Detroit's been playing better, but I mean, Detroit doesn't go through anybody like a hot knife through butter like they did. And I mean, it's 2 weeks in a row they've given up 45. And I mean, it's a sad thing to see when a team just lays down on the coach. But we've seen it with them. And we saw it a couple of years back with Tampa and Schiano, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Just they walk on the field, just no passion. They're, you know, and you saw it earlier in the year, like Senior said. If you watch the Miami and Jets game in London, Miami didn't show up. The defense didn't show up, and that's what the Eagles are doing. And I think they're just going to keep doing it until Kelly's gone.
Mm. So we'll be comfortable. So if there's any opponent after what happened Sunday night, if there's any opponent that sets up perfectly for the Patriots anyway, it's the Eagles.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're just that game's not going to be pretty, and that game will be on in our area, obviously. So. The other game I wanted to talk to you about, Senior, while you were still with us, is what I call the Senior Bowl Sunday night on ESPN. Your other two favorite teams in the history of the NFL, besides the Patriots, play each other Sunday night on the Peacock. The Colts and the Steelers meet at the ketchup bottle. The Colts seem to be having this new infusion of enthusiasm with Mr. Hasselbeck at the quarterback. But even with the loss this past Sunday, I think the Steelers win this one at home. What do you think, Senior?
Yeah, I agree. You see this as a high-scoring game. I think both offenses are good and the defenses aren't so good. But I think the Steelers with Big Ben, their offense is better than the Indy offense with Matt Hasselbeck, obviously. There's your difference. If you had a 100% Andrew Luck playing, then you might have this total shootout game. But – yeah, I see the Steelers winning. I see that Steeler offense with Big Ben at the controls, with all the weapons, even without Le'Veon Bell. I mean, they're not really missing him that much because D'Angelo Williams is playing fabulous. And, you know, he's utilizing all three of those wide receivers. I mean, Wheaton went crazy last week, you know. It's just way too much for that really bad Colts defense to handle.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Steelers have a field day, win this game fairly comfortably.
Mm.
Just too much firepower for the Colts. The Colts don't have the firepower without Luck to fight back against
it. There is the outside chance Roethlisberger doesn't play because of this concussion. But
that would change the game, obviously.
Provided he plays, I'm with you, Senior. I mean, Hasselbeck's a solid quarterback. I mean, Pittsburgh's defense didn't play very good last week, but overall are not that bad. And the Colts defense is awful. I think it's a big game for D'Angelo Williams, and I think a big game for Martavis Bryant. He's a stud. I think he's going to really emerge as like a real, real like top 10 type receiver over the second half of this year into next year. He's as good as anybody.
Mm. What do you think, Schmitty?
Yeah, I agree with both of those guys. I think Pittsburgh wins this pretty comfortably.
Mm. I think so, too.
As long as Ben is on the center, they'll be fine.
And you know, Bradshaw's done for this. The Colts running game is in shambles now. Bradshaw Gore seems to have hit a wall, and Bradshaw was playing. Yeah, and Bradshaw was playing well, but now he's done. He's done for the season, unsurprisingly. So it's going to be the Gore and Boom Heron show. And you know, I think Pittsburgh's defense is good enough to keep them in check.
It's a very important game for both of them because Houston is coming on.
Mm.
So, you know, if the Colts could find themselves in second place after this game.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Houston has a really tough game this week.
At Buffalo.
Yeah. One game I want to talk about quick, I want to talk about before we get to the others, and we'll head to break in a minute. Thursday night is a big game, in my opinion, for the Green Bay Packers, coming off, in my opinion, kind of a bad loss at home in primetime to the Bears. They go to Ford Field to take on the Lions. Like you said, Cowboy, it's tough to really measure how good the Lions are because, I mean, they were playing like PS41 on Thursday. So, I mean, was that a mirage? If I'm Aaron Rodgers and I'm this Packer team, I got to go out and I got to punch the Lions in the face and reestablish their spot in the NFC. I can't see them going into Detroit and struggling. I know the Lions won at Lambeau for the first time since, I don't know, Curly Lambeau coached or something, it seemed like. But I can't see the Packers going into Detroit and laying another egg. I don't. I think they have to win this game. No?
I like Detroit in this game. I think it's ridiculous that Green Bay's favored. Green Bay, I mean, you keep waiting for it to happen, And I think they're kind of like Atlanta in that I just think they're not that good. I probably watched every minute of every game the Packers have played this year. And some of it's on Rodgers, but I think I've said it on here before. He doesn't have anybody who can get open. And it was the same thing against Chicago. He's got a decent defense, but not a great defense. Detroit has an emerging shutdown corner in Darius Slay, who's just going to take somebody away, you know, maybe probably Cobb, right? He's like a Josh Norman type who can take a guy away. And outside of Cobb, Adams and Jones are both like well below average receivers. And I mean, it's not that this has been a 1 or 2 week thing for Green Bay. I mean, they started out hot and have not been very good since then. This game's in Detroit. Detroit's playing well. And I think it's the Lions' game to lose, frankly. Hmm. I mean, I don't see Green Bay scoring more than 20 points. Their offense is in shambles. And the Lions' defense, if you remember, a playoff team last year, a good team last year, good defense last year. And they started out awful, but they're playing well. They've put it together. Their defense is playing a lot better. And I don't like the Lions big, but I think they win the game.
I don't know.
Anyone else?
I don't know. I mean, the Packer receiving core is struggling mightily. I mean, they're dropping passes all over the place. I don't know, Cowboy. I'm gonna put my faith in Aaron Rodgers. I think he steps up and they win this game. I do.
I did that last week.
Well, that's true too. That's true. Senior, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to ride with the Cowboy on it. I really agree with everything he says. I watch the Packers, and these guys get no separation. They show Rodgers. He's scrambling, making time for himself, but still nobody gets open. This team hasn't recovered from the loss of Jordy Nelson.
You really think?
That's just really, really hurt their offense. Mm. You know, now, if you put Cobb in that number two role, all of a sudden the offense is just a lot better. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're going to pick an upset, and the Lions are always good at home. I like Detroit to win the game. Hmm. I totally agree.
Okay. Schmitty?
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to take Green Bay.
Okay, good. I'm not the only one.
to win. They played, 2 weeks ago? And the Lions beat them in Green Bay.
Mm.
I think there's a little revenge here. I think he's going to force feed the ball to Randall Cobb. Devontae Adams, his targets are going to go way down now. I mean, I know he lost my trust last week. He was awful. And they're going to ride Eddie Lacy.
I think they're going to ride Eddie Lacy, too.
Victory. And not only that, but I can see Matt Stafford. He had a great game last week, coming back to earth and being the Matt Stafford we all know and love.
I mean, I don't think he needs to have that great of a game, honestly. I think 24 gets it done against Green Bay, and I think they're more than capable of doing that in Detroit. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong, because the league's a lot more fun when Aaron Rodgers is slinging it around for a high-powered offense. But this team has shown me nothing, absolutely nothing, to say that that's who they are. I mean, they had that win against Minnesota. It was a nice win, but it was, it was mostly the defense, and, you know, Rodgers pulled a couple of rabbits out of his hats, like Senior said, scrambling around for his life and, you know, finding James Jones in the corner of the end zone. This is a tall order for Green Bay. This game is a tall order for Green Bay, and Detroit's not as bad as they were earlier in the year. So we'll see.
The defense has definitely been playing a lot better. Definitely has.
And if they match Slay up on Cobb, I mean, he's really, really, really good. I mean, he takes away that number one guy. That's what he does.
I think they'd probably match him up more with Adams. Adams is getting way more targets. And Cobb can move around. I don't know if they'd put Slay in the slot.
Right. You know? We'll see. Mm. We'll see. He plays in the slot more than Norman, but
we'll see.
It'd be a fun one.
I say Cobb gets 10-plus targets in this game, force-fed.
I think so, too.
And Eddie Lacy's going to get 25 carries.
I think he does, too.
It could be an ugly one, like you said, maybe like a 21-17 type game.
I think the Packers have to win this game because they have an opening. They have an opening in the division, and we'll get to that game on the other side of the break. Great first segment, guys. Awesome. Senior, I hope you stay. If you can't, you're the best anyway.
Thanks, Scott.
You are awesome. Guys, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue talking week 13 in the NFL. And then I got a question. And, Senior, I'll bring it to you on the next show, because this is a question that can kind of lean us through the rest of the season about the league and the talent pool in general. But when we come back, we'll continue week 13 chat, talk a little college football, a little boxing, a little everything. You are on The Sports Evolution. More after this.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, The Place to Be Podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We featured the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, Lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Goodwill Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back to episode... Damn it, I had the number. I'll give the number at the end of the show. The screen just vanished.
11, I think.
I think it is 11. You're right. You're right, Schmitty. Welcome back to episode 11 of your home for everything sports, Place Be Nation's Sports Evolution. Scott Criscolo, Cowboy, Schmitty. Cowboy Senior had to exit stage left. We need to get a little shut-eye, and I thank him, as always, for his insight. We will continue talking week 13 in the NFL. I'm going to go on a little college football rant. We'll talk some boxing. Anything else? Big upset in boxing this past weekend. We didn't talk about Ronda and Holly. Cowboy, we'll talk about that later on, too.
We did.
Did we talk about it? I don't remember.
You were unavailable.
Oh, that was when I needed my shut eye. I see. Okay. Well, I think that I know that there's a rumor that the rematch will be like 4th of July next year, because that'll be what, 200, UFC 200,
right.
And I think Ronda kicks the shit out of her. This is my opinion.
We'll talk about more of that more as it comes, but a lot of times in the fighting and the fighting game, whether it's boxing or UFC, when someone gets really thoroughly dismantled like that, the last thing they want to do is fight that same person. You can just real quick, you can look at TJ Dillashaw and Renan Barao for a comparison. Barao was, you know, number two or so pound for pound. Dillashaw was a nobody. Dillashaw whooped his ass. Very, very similar to what Holm did. They fought the rematch. Barao was, I believe, a slight favorite, and Dillashaw whipped his ass again. Frankie Edgar, BJ Penn, too. It's a, I think, a tall, tall order for Rousey to overcome. It's a mental thing as much as a physical thing to overcome that in a rematch after getting, so it wasn't like a fluke thing. She got her ass kicked, mm-hmm. And it just dismantled and beat in every possible way in that fight. And I think you have to favor Holm in the rematch.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we'll talk more about that. I mean, we're good, you know, 7-9 months away or whatever from a rematch. What you don't have to wait 7 to 9 months to do is go on to placementnation.com. The holiday tournament spectacular continues. We're into round two of the regions. Our man, Mr. Azzaro, thoughts, I think, as the ratings sink. He has a discussion about the current state of WWE. Our excellent WWE Network Adventure columns continue. We just did the 112-83 episode of World Class Championship Wrestling. Glenn Butler with his walk around the web. Mr. Bayless with his Raw rundown. And the Kevin Kelly Show earlier in the week. They talked to Christopher Daniels. So, PlaceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. We're getting close, of course, to holiday time, guys. We are in December. Click on Amazon.com. The link is right to the right of the screen on PlaceBeNation.com. Buy all the stuff you need for your loved ones and friends. And we get a little piece back to help run the site. So, and of course, also check out our free ebook on the right hand side. You can go to Barnes & Noble and get it. Of course, as you wrestling fans know, my man JT and I are rewriting our Vintage Vault refreshes, and we're doing Volume 1. We did Volume 1, the Federation Era, which took you from WrestleMania 1 till Survivor Series 1992. So check that out as well. Perfectly, absolutely free. PlaceBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, guys, let's go back into week 13 of the NFL season. Of course, one of the bigger games this week is the Battle of Gotham. Everything at MetLife will be blue. For those who have never been to MetLife Stadium, and I was there for two things. I was there for a Giants-Patriots, ironically, preseason game, and I was there for WrestleMania 29. But there's no real signage at MetLife Stadium because these two teams share the building. So everything is lit. Depending on the team. When it's a New York Giants home game, everything is lit blue. When it's a New York Jets home game, everything is lit green. And the stadium will be lit blue this Sunday when the Giants, coming off a real disappointing, ugly loss to the Redskins, host the Jets, who are coming off a very needed win over the Dolphins on Sunday. Both teams in different circumstances right now. The Giants are in a unbelievably horrendous division, while the Jets are looking up at, as usual, the best team in football. Who needs this game more, Cowboy?
Man, I mean, they both really. I mean, it's a huge game for both teams. I guess the Jets a little bit more, just because of how bad the NFC East is. But, man, it's a huge game. for both of these teams. If I'm a Jets fan, I'm scared because of how bad the Giants played last week. They're such a schizophrenic team that you almost expect them to come out and be real hot in this one. It's a real tough game to call for me too. It looks like if Revis doesn't play, that's huge, and I gotta go with the Giants. I think that Beckham will run roughshod over the rest of that secondary.
Okay. I have a feeling too, but the Giants got to run the football. I mean, they got to get some kind of control on that clock.
They've not lost. Happen against the Jets.
Honestly, Scott, I would, if you look at the Pats blueprint for playing the Jets is just completely abandon the run. There's no point even trying, especially with that shit running game the Giants.
They really do have a shit running game. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, they should play Vereen the whole game.
Yep.
And just, you use quick passes as their running game. Let Eli, you can throw on the Jets again, particularly without Revis. And I think that's the clearest path for a Giants victory because their defense, the Jets are definitely going to be able to do work against the Giants defense.
Yes.
The Giants are going to have to outscore them.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't waste possessions running Rashad Jennings into the line for no gain.
Any thoughts, Schmitty?
I can't get a grip, a hold on this Giants team. They play the Patriots right down to the last minute. A great game. And then they come out and play Washington after a bye and get smoked.
Yeah.
How the fuck does that happen? Seriously. The Redskins?
And this is a big game for the Giants. And this is a big game for the Giants division-wise because, one NFC, at least two of the three other teams in the division are going to lose this week because we already talked about the Eagles. They're going to get creamed. And then the other two play each other Monday night, and they both stink anyway. So this is a big opportunity for the Giants. So we'll see. I like the Giants in a close game. Fitzpatrick's going to have to really play. I think both quarterbacks are going to have decent games. But I have a feeling the Giants, it's going to be one of those last possession things, in my opinion. Your other team there, Cowboy, big game for them. Well, I don't want to say big game, but certainly a winnable game for them this week. The Cardinals head into St. Louis to play the Rams. The Rams are just a weird team. They're one of the most, and that kind of goes with what I wanted to discuss later on about just some of these teams are so enigmatic in the NFL this year. One minute you say, the Rams kind of have a basic offense, but does its job, and the defense is really good, and then the next week they play awful. This is one of these weird games where, the Cardinals could either go out and smoke them or struggle and maybe win, maybe lose. You know what I mean?
I mean, the Rams traditionally play them really tough. They play the Cardinals tough, and they play the Seahawks tough. So with that thought, it's okay. Maybe it plays true to form, and maybe the Rams play him tough. On the other side of that coin is the Rams, I don't think are so much a confusing team as they are just at this point a bad team. The quarterback position is probably the worst situation in the whole NFL. Foles, if you've watched them, Foles is lost. No confidence. He looks friggin' terrible. Their defense, which is supposed to be good, has not been good the last few weeks. And teams can put nine guys in the box, and, no NFL running back can do much against that. And Gurley hasn't been able to do much against that. On paper, the Cardinals should wipe their ass with the Rams this week. I think with the divisional thing, with the fact it's in St. Louis, with the fact the Rams play them tough, I think it'll be a little closer than that, but I don't see the Rams winning this game. I don't think they can score enough points to win the game, and that they may hold the Cardinals to 17 and still not be able to score enough points to win.
Right.
It's just the Rams are just a disaster. They've really fallen off, and I don't know how Jeff Fisher still has a job because in general they have a lot of talent, but it goes to show, what a lack of a quarterback will do to a otherwise pretty talented team. Foles makes Fitzpatrick look like Johnny Unitas. You know, I mean, he's awful, absolutely awful. And to bench him for Case Keenum, who also sucks, and then have to go back to him. So now you've killed his confidence by benching him for one of the five worst quarterbacks on an NFL roster. And now, you know, I mean, it's just a mess. It's just that they'd be better off going out and bringing in Tebow for the last 6 weeks of the season.
You know what? That might work with Gurley behind him.
Mm.
Better than it will with Foles.
It's like the Trent Richardson thing, Keith. You know, I think you could just literally put anybody else back there, and he would be better than Foles. Anyone,
even a Blaine Gabbert.
Well, yeah, Keith. Oh man, we'll talk about him, but you know, Blaine Gabbert's not bad.
He might be better than Nick Foles.
He's definitely better.
I might have to say that.
If you've watched San Francisco, I mean, he has played well. He has absolutely played well. I mean, and it shocks me as much as the next guy, but he is, you know, over the last few years, he's learned a thing or two, and he is a run-of-the-mill, below-average NFL quarterback these days, which is a hell of a lot more than he used to be.
Which seems like three-quarters of the league right now, but
he's
anyway.
Accurate. He's very accurate.
And
he's
can move.
A strong arm. But I'm pissed off with Seattle and Arizona for not blitzing him.
Mm-hmm.
They just, I'm telling you, what I said about him, I mean, come, blitz him.
He's getting the ball out quick, Keith.
I know, but it's all check down. Sean Drone's getting 10 receptions a game.
Tight ends
that you've never heard of before are getting 10 catches a game.
But that is how you stop a team from blitzing you, right?
Well, that's true.
Hmm.
But if you notice, the last drive of that game, Arizona on third and fourth down, blitzed him. And what happened? Nothing.
You know, frankly, San Francisco has just, if you watch that game, has just as big of a right to be pissed off at the officials as the Patriots. I mean, the refs handed the Cardinals the game. Was it four defensive penalties in a row?
Did
on that
you see
final
that
draft?
the goal line stand there? There was one series they were down at the goal line, and I swear they threw five flags on the San Francisco DBs holding defensive.
They ran eight plays at the goal.
It was amazing. Play after play. Oh, that was incomplete flag. Beautiful.
Crazy. Another team that could use a win and has a very winnable game is the Atlanta Falcons, who will travel to Tampa this week to take on Jameis Winston and the Bucks. They struggled mightily after a hot start, just like the Packers. Tampa's played okay the last few weeks. Jameis Winston settled in a little bit. What do you think of this one, Schmitty?
I think Tampa's going to kick their ass.
Wow, really?
I think is a fraud team. Tampa Bay is going to finish with a better record than Atlanta.
Wow. Really? Okay.
Matt Ryan looks awful. Julio Jones. Well, Freeman is coming back, so that's definitely going to help. But, I mean, that's all he's got between Freeman and Julio Jones, and he's making bad decision after bad decision, throwing picks from his own goal line. I can't see them stopping the Bucs.
Hmm.
So unless they score 37 points, they're going to lose.
Hmm. Surprised at that.
I agree with everything you said, Keith, about Atlanta and about Ryan in particular. You know, I'm willing to give Ryan the benefit of the doubt a little bit because he's been a good quarterback in the league, and it's not like he's old. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's really not playing well. I'm holding my nose and picking Atlanta in this one. Tampa is another one of those. I think they're pretty fraudulent too. I mean, they're not as good as that record.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they're the kind of team when they get into this spot in a game that maybe they, you know, it's a game they probably should win, they lay an egg.
Mm-hmm.
And their defense is a real liability. Atlanta back. It's tough to run on Tampa, but Freeman's really, really good out of the backfield. And just anybody to take some of the pressure off Julio is a huge deal, and I do. I like Atlanta in this one. I was pretty disappointed in Tampa's performance this last week, putting up 12 against Indy, losing to Hasselbeck. Indy's not any good. That Indy team is no better than what Atlanta's been trotting out there. So I expect a bit of a similar result.
Hmm. Okay. This is a game. This next game is what you call a big boy game. A team that a lot of people, not sure if they want to be put in the elite category yet, even though they are a first place team right now. But this is a game where which is kind of called like the big boy pants game. Like, you know, all right, it's time to prove that you belong, and this isn't a paper record. The team I'm speaking of is the Minnesota Vikings, who are home this week to the Seattle Seahawks. Minnesota leads the North. AP having a good year. Teddy Bridgewater, hasn't lost any games for them, but obviously dealing with his own health issues. I don't know, Cowboy. Is this a big boy game for the Vikings? Can they win this game?
Can they win the game? Yes. Will they win the game? No. So, Scott, first of all, I don't know if Keith heard it, but it sounded like you were on Mars, the senior Mars rover there for a little bit.
Oh, really?
For a little bit.
Oh, really? I couldn't tell. All right.
But you're back. You're back.
Okay.
You're back.
Okay. You had broken up a bit too, so maybe I don't know. Maybe it's Brock Osweiler. Maybe he's tired of you guys calling him mediocre. I don't know.
I like Brock.
you're back in the on this planet.
I am. So all right. Good.
So I think Seattle. Keith's probably going to agree with me on this, I would guess. But I think Seattle, while their defense isn't what it was, it certainly isn't what it was. That's been proven week in and week out. They're still finding a way to get it done. And the blueprint isn't all that much different than what they did last year, which is start terrible and then string together wins. Minnesota had this big boy game 2 weeks ago against Green Bay at home and lost by 14 points to Green Bay, who, as you know, I don't think particularly highly of. And Green Bay didn't play great in that game. It was more Minnesota was not very good. So I think Seattle wins here. The Minnesota offense is just too one-dimensional for me to. I think they're like the good bad team this year, where they'll beat the teams they're supposed to beat, but then lose whenever they step up in competition. Seattle, for all their flaws on defense, if they put eight guys in the box, they're going to stop Peterson and make Teddy Bridgewater beat them. You're going to have Richard Sherman one-on-one with Diggs, most likely, who's really the only weapon they have in the passing game. Mike Wallace doesn't have a catch in about 6 weeks. So it's I think they're tailor-made for Seattle, frankly. And I think Seattle's got the type of offense. I mean, I know they went crazy this week, but no one's going to totally shut them down because of the running game with Rawls and because of what Wilson can do, the unique skill set that Wilson has. They'll put up 20 on anybody. So I think Seattle's defense pretty much shuts down Minnesota. And I think it looks a lot like that Green Bay Minnesota game where the game ends and you say, okay, the better team won that game. And I think the better team is Seattle.
I agree with everything you just said. Everything you said. Russell Wilson is starting to heat up, so Seattle's pushing for that wild card spot. Yeah.
And I mean, realistically, Keith, Minnesota has a good defense, so their path to victory is to win the game 17-13 or something like that. And I think Seattle's offense is playing too good for that right now.
Yeah. Even with the loss of Jimmy Graham. And I really don't think it's going to be too big of a drop-off with Luke Wilson, because Graham was blocking most of the time anyway.
They never figured out how to use Graham. Yeah, I mean, it's awful. Jimmy Graham went down with the same exact knee injury as Victor Cruz got last year. Mm-hmm. So his career is really in question. But you hate to say it, but I completely agree with Keith that he wasn't. I mean, it was almost like they were trying to fit a square peg into a round hole by force feeding him the ball. And I mean, it might almost be a little addition by subtraction, frankly. I think Wilson might be just a better fit overall for the for what they want to do.
More traditional tight end.
Yeah, exactly.
Another team you guys mentioned earlier that's you know maybe making a late season playoff push is the Texans. They're in Buffalo Sunday. What do you think, Schmitty?
Ooh, this is a good game here. Very good game. The Bills D, I'm sure they're going to game plan to try to take out Hopkins, and I think they might be successful doing that. We'll see. This is but their defense, I think, is going to, you know, put a hurting on Tyrod Taylor. This is a tough one. I'm not sure which way to lean here. I think I'm going to give it to Buffalo being at home, even though the Texans are playing really, really well, especially defensively. But I'm going to Brian Hoyle probably, you know, I can see both of these quarterbacks throwing a few interceptions apiece. So whoever capitalizes on those turnovers wins. I think the Bills have a better run game. They can probably control the clock a little more. I'll give the Bills by a field goal.
I'm with you, Keith. I think LeSean McCoy is the difference in this game. If you watch Buffalo and watch McCoy, he's every bit the guy he was for Philly, not last year, but the year before. The last 6-7 weeks, he's ever since he came back from that injury, he's been playing great. And Houston's run defense is not great. They're going to get great pass rush, but you can run on them.
Yep.
And I think that was a bit of a coming out party for Watkins last week for this year. I mean, I think Taylor finally figured out just throw it up for the guy. You know, I mean, that's if you watched, he had, you know, 160 yards and 2 touchdowns in the first half, and it was all every single play was Taylor just throwing it up to him. So the threat of that opens things up for McCoy, and with Buffalo at home, I think they get it done. I absolutely think they get it done. I mean, it'll take. And it's. I like you. I think Houston's playing better, but you look at their schedule. You look at who they've beaten. I think Buffalo is just frankly. I think Buffalo is a better team still right now, and I think they'll win it by more than 3. I think Houston's gonna have trouble moving the ball on them too. With with the non-existent running game and really only one legit weapon in the passing game. And that's the kind of offense that's tailor made for Rex to put something together. I mean, if he's just got a game plan to stop DeAndre Hopkins, I think he can do it.
Yeah.
Tractor pull game in Miami. The Dolphins host Baltimore, who are without Mr. Flacco for the rest of the season. Neither of these teams have much to look forward to for the rest of the season. I mean, do the Dolphins have any chance at this point, or no? I mean, the Ravens are done. I think we all can say that.
Well, they both have the same record. They're both done. But I'll give the edge to Miami. Just the Matt Schaub factor.
Mm.
You know, and the Dolphins just fired their offensive coordinator. So whoever's coming in this time, I'm pretty sure they're going to force feed the run game.
Yeah.
And even though Baltimore is pretty decent against the run, I don't see them being able to score too many points in this game.
Yeah, Baltimore's pass defense is so bad too. And a guy to watch this week with Rashard Matthews out, Devontae Parker, the rookie from Louisville, will make his first start, and I think it could be a big one with against that secondary. Miami is by no means good, but they're better than Baltimore at this point, and they're home. And, you know, when Schaub's playing quarterback, you start the game down 7-0 because you have to take into account the pick six he's going to throw. I've never seen anything like it. He's good for one every single game.
What should be a winnable game for the Bengals, who need to keep pace and maybe, you know, open the door for them to possibly cut into the gap between them and the Patriots in the AFC. They head to Cleveland, who's a dumpster fire as usual. I see Cincinnati winning this game pretty handily. What do you think, guys?
Yeah. Yep.
Austin Davis is starting.
Yeah, I mean, any fight the Browns had left has to be gone after the way that that Monday night game ended. Mm. I mean, right?
Yeah.
And Cincinnati is a good team. I mean, you know, it's a divisional game. They're on the road. You never know. But it's really tough to see any scenario but a Cincinnati, like, comfortable victory.
Yeah, I agree.
Jacksonville heads to Nissan Stadium in Nashville to take on the Titans. Again, nothing for either team here. Bortles has played well of late. What do you guys think about this one? Can the Jags win this one? What do you think, Cowboy?
Yeah, you know, I think it'll be a pretty fun game to watch. I like both offenses a little bit, and some fun guys to watch. You know, Allen Robinson's a stud, and Delanie Walker is one of the best tight ends in the league. Mariota's playing well. You know, the fact it's in Tennessee. And Tennessee, for their bad record, is not a team that, when you watch them week in and week out, it looks like they're not the Eagles or the Browns, a team that just packed it in and quit. I think they realize they're young. They got every guy that they have out there is playing for a job, and they're trying to build something. And I like them. I like Tennessee at home, and I think this game will be a shootout. I think I like Tennessee, like 37-31 kind of deal. Oh. I think it'll be a fun game to watch.
Wow.
Yeah.
You concur, Schmitty?
Yeah, a little bit. But I'm going to take it the opposite way. I'll take the Jaguars to outscore Tennessee.
Okay. We head to Soldier Field.
Jaguars might win that division.
Yeah. You laugh. It's true. I mean, if they...
They're 4-7.
I mean, that just...
If they win and Indy and Houston lose, which is very possible this week, they're one game back.
And that... Yeah.
And Houston's coming to Foxborough next week, I think. Well, they're playing the Patriots, so pretty much chalk that one up as a loss.
In Chicago, the Bears coming off a big win in Green Bay host the 49ers, who are, you know, not good, even though they did pretty much may have a win snatched away from them on Sunday. A little boost of enthusiasm in the Windy City. Bears win this one, Schmitty?
Yes. Yes, because they're going to listen to this podcast and they're going to blitz the hell out of Blaine Gabbert. Mm. And he will cowl.
You concur, Cowboy?
I think the Bears are going to win the game. I think it'll be close. I said it before, I'll say it now. I'm impressed with what Gabbert's done. I mean, because he's really working with nothing there. I mean, they're running back who's dominating the touches. They literally picked up off the couch, you know. I mean, and their defense has nobody left, and they've been competitive with two of the best teams in the league. I mean, they almost beat Arizona this last week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if they went into Chicago and won. I think the line's like 8, which I think is ridiculous. I think it's a 3-point game either way. But I actually think Chicago's a pretty good team, and I think they'll win this at home. If the game was in San Francisco, I'd pick the 49ers, though.
Okay.
They're a much different team on the road than they are at home. They've been pretty good at Levi, but I see the two-headed monster, Forte and Langford, just running all over San Francisco.
Okay. Let's go to the late games. We'll head out to Qualcomm. Broncos coming off the big win Sunday night. Play the Chargers. San Diego's defense.
Putrid.
Yeah. Denver should win this one. I mean, Osweiler not exactly playing the Pats defense, but... I mean, they should be good enough to win, particularly if they do run the football, which you guys talked about earlier in the show. What do you think, Cowboy?
The Chargers' defense is awful.
Yeah.
And if they can't run on San Diego, they can't run on anybody. I think it's a close game. I think it's I think the Chargers will keep it close. The Denver defense hasn't been playing as good as they were earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think it's playing good enough to get it done. Chicago, I mean, San Diego, you should have 24 points right when you walk on the field. Their defense is so bad, and I expect him to force feed Demaryius Thomas and get him rolling again. I think he has a big, big, big game here, even if he is matched up with Verrett. So Denver 27-24.
Okay. Team playing pretty. Two teams actually playing pretty well. One playing well, shockingly, in my opinion, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs, who have won five in a row without Jamaal Charles. They head to Oakland to take on the Raiders. I think I like Kansas City in this game. What do you think, Cowboy?
Keith, you're up, buddy.
I definitely like Kansas City in this game. Kansas City's going to make the playoffs.
They are.
They've been playing really well. Alex Smith is actually throwing the ball down the field, or at least he did last week. It doesn't matter who they put in there running back. That just such a great running game, period. I don't know if West – is West going to play this week?
West practiced in full today. Barring a setback with the hamstring, he should be out there.
Yeah, and then, I mean – you know, I think Ware earned himself some more carries, so that's a pretty nice two-headed monster you got there.
Not how Andy Reid rolls.
No, you're right. It's usually one guy, but hey, if anything happens to West, you know Ware's proved that he can step right in there.
I'm just going to throw this out there that I really hope it's just the Charkandra Quest show. That's what I'm after. Yeah.
Shh, we won't explain why.
I think
Travis Kelce will probably have a monster game because the Raiders do not know how to cover a tight end. Or should I say O'Shaughnessy? He's the backup tight end, right? Because it's usually the backup tight end that scores the touchdowns.
That's true. Yeah, I don't like Kansas City on the road nearly as much as I like them at home. It's a divisional game. This is a really tough game to call for me because the Kansas City secondary isn't that good, and if the Raiders are going to beat you, it's going to be in Oakland getting the ball to Crabtree and Amari Cooper. I think this is a really, really tough game to call. I'm going to take Kansas City by three. I picked them to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. They're hot. I'm going to trust them on the road, but don't be surprised if Oakland steals this one.
I agree with you, Cowboy, 100%. I think the Raiders could score points in this game, but Schmitty's right. Alex Smith has taken more chances than he usually does. Obviously, you know, with a depleted running attack, I think he's had to. But I agree with you 100%. I would not be surprised Oakland wins this game, not at all. But I like the Chiefs. This game in New Orleans, the Saints host the only undefeated team left, and that is the Carolina Panthers. I watched Carolina Thursday completely dismantle my piece of crap team. The Panthers are one of those teams that don't do one thing really great. They do everything good. They play good defense. Wow. They're fast. They make decisions on offense. Cam Newton just seems so mature in the pocket. At least this is what I've seen. But I will say this. This is one of those games where a loss could be in the cards. I could see the Saints playing inspired football in this game and winning. But I'm gonna say that the Panthers win. But I would not be surprised if loss one comes here.
I think the Saints will be lucky if they can keep it within double digits.
So, I mean, everything points to what Keith said. The Saints' defense has been really, really, really bad. Mm-hmm. The Carolina, I think they run the ball great.
Great.
It's probably the best running game in the league, right, when you take into account Newton. I think one of the things that makes them so tough, I think they're completely legit. I think they're completely legit, and I think it's going to be very difficult for it not to be Arizona heading to Carolina for the NFC title, barring injuries, of course. And I can't wait for that game. I think it's a great, great game. One of the things that with Carolina that makes them so tough is that with that running game, if they get third and three or less, they're almost impossible to stop. Between Newton's legs, Stewart, and Greg Olsen. I mean, they're just almost impossible to stop in those situations, and they're able to keep drives going. And they have a very good defense. And the other thing they do great is shut down number one receivers, because they have the best cornerback
Josh
in
Norman.
The NFL.
Yeah,
who is
he's great.
I say it's not Darrell Revis, it's not Richard Sherman, it's Josh Norman. He's the best. He is the best cornerback in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
With all that said, I don't think they're going to go undefeated.
And Tampa Bay, baby. Tampa Bay is going to knock them off.
And New Orleans. I mean, they play Atlanta twice. They play Tampa. I don't have their schedule in front of me.
They play after this week. They're in New Orleans, then home to the Falcons, at the Giants, at the Falcons, home to Tampa.
Right. So if it's not this week, at the Giants would be the only. I mean, I can't see Atlanta beating them. The way they're playing. New Orleans is traditionally very tough at home. And they have the kind of offense that even if Norman takes away Brandon Cooks, there's not a huge drop-off to the other guys, you know, Snead and those guys. They can run the ball. That's what they're running, like Carolina. It's the run defense, and Ingram can run the ball. And New Orleans is – we've seen it before where they can get into shootouts. And I'm gonna make the bold prediction here. And I'm going to say that New Orleans wins a shootout. Breeze last hand in New Orleans. They're tough, tough in New Orleans. And I think they win a shootout. And I do not think they're the better team. I think Carolina is a very, 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 very good team. Probably with the injuries to the Patriots. I mean, they're right now they're the best team in the NFL. I think it's ridiculous to say otherwise. But with all that said, this is the week they take the loss. New Orleans by three.
I'm going to put the over-under at 3.5 punts, and I'm going to take the under for Carolina. New Orleans will not stop this team at all.
Hence the shootout.
Not going to happen. Nope. Carolina 31-17.
Yeah, you're probably on the right side of this, Keith, but, you know, I get on this island sometimes, and sometimes it works out. You know?
Well, like I said, you know, this has been a very unpredictable NFL season. We sit and we talk numbers and talent, but there's just been some games that just scratch your head. And so we could talk about how awful the Saints defense is and how Carolina's just good at everything. And Breeze throws for 400. I mean, he's not going to throw 400 yards. But this could be a game that they gut check themselves into winning. Who knows? You know, who knows?
It is a division game, so.
Yeah.
You know, anything.
Breeze is going to have to throw for 400 yards, Scott. That's all part of my
plan. Yeah, I know.
If he's under 400, my prediction's in big trouble.
To your point, Scott, last week I thought Arizona was going to beat San Francisco by 30.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and it ended up being a 6-point win. And matter of fact, they could have lost that game.
Yeah.
The home road thing is such a big deal, you know, and I always say that. And particularly for a team like New Orleans, you know, and I mean, if you think about the way the Panthers are built, I mean, they're not like built for that turf. They're not that kind of team. It's if they're going to lose, this is a game they can lose.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. I just can't see it happening. You know, Cam's going to toy with that defense. Mm.
I like if they don't, I don't think they're going to go 16-0. I don't know if this is the game they lose. You could see the Giants giving them a game in a few weeks. I agree with you guys. I can't see the Falcons beating them in either game. But, yeah, you never know.
It could be the Giants.
It could be the Giants.
It seems like they step up when they play good teams.
They do.
And then when they play bad teams, they lose.
They stay down. Yep, they play down.
Unbelievable.
And then Monday night, throwaway game in the NFC East. Well, I shouldn't say throwaway game. The Redskins host Dallas. The Cowboys are a mess.
Is that the first place Redskins?
It is the first place Redskins. Yes, it is.
So it can't be a throwaway game.
No, that's why I said that. I said it's not a throwaway game.
I'm just messing with
you. I know. It's my throwaway game, Cowboy, all right? I'm not 10-1. How's that sound? No, the Cowboys suck. And Washington is probably going to win this game. which makes the Giant game so big because the Eagles are going to get crushed. And then at least one of these, obviously somebody's going to lose this game. So it's a big moment for the Giants. They can have some separation and maybe overcome the loss to Washington. So
Scott, at this point, and it's a serious question, as a Cowboys fan, are you rooting for losses?
I was rooting for losses last week. I was rooting for losses before for the cracked, another cracked collarbone.
For the better draft.
Yeah,
pick.
They're not good, Cowboy. They're not good. The offensive line is the best part of this team. And when you say that, you're pretty sad. The running game is a mess. I was talking with somebody at work a couple days ago at work, who's a Cowboy fan. I can't stand watching Darren McFadden run anymore. It's like he's doing the moonwalk. He gets in the line and then he runs backwards. He just falls into, I can't take it anymore. I would kill for a guy like Derrick Henry or Leonard Fournette. I'd kill for either of those guys.
He's been your best player this year. He's been the Cowboys' best player.
And that's sad because I there's times I've seen him, and he's had a couple good games, but there's times I've seen him and he just doesn't hit the line like he used to. But when you don't have a passing game, and now I'm going to go back to watching 5-yard dump offs, you know, check down. When your offense is a check down, you're screwed. And that's what it is. I mean, I laughed my ass off. I was at my brother's house watching a game Thursday. After Romo got hurt again. And let me tell you something. I've cracked my collarbone. When you do that over and over again, it never heals. You'll always get tweaks. You'll always get twinges of pain. It's never going to be the same. Having said that, I said to my brother, I turned and said, guess what? Matt Cassel's first pass is going to be a 5-yard dump off. Sure enough, it's a 5-yard dump off. And I said, oh, here we go again. Dump offs for the rest of the year.
At least he went to the correct team.
Well, that's true too. But I mean, they might as well just fall to pieces. And I mean, right now they'd have the fourth pick. They probably will either draft a running back or they'll draft a linebacker. And there's some good linebackers in this draft.
Well, Fournette can't come out, right?
No, he can't.
That's next year.
Yeah. Derrick Henry is a beast, and I've seen plenty of Alabama football this year, and he is a great. I mean, he's big. He's like 6. I think he's 6'3", like 245. Guy runs like the wind. You really want to
draft an Alabama running back in the top 5? He's big. He's strong.
And then he falls apart. No, I'd like to see that. They really need to beef the defense up. The defense is not good. They could probably find a decent running back somewhere down the line, but I think quarterback is going to end up being their biggest problem over the next few years. But in any event, there's
Johnny Manziel will be there next year.
God, 0-16. Anyway, let me ask you guys this, and I may save this question. I want to bring it out there anyway because it's in my head, but I may save this for when Senior's back. Has this been one of the, in terms of just talent, has this been one of the more disappointing NFL seasons? There's just a lot of not very good teams. I mean, of the 32 teams, I think 17 of them are 6-5 or worse. A lot of these 6-5 tentative, tenuous. And quarterbacks, there's just a lot of bad quarterbacks. When you say, if you ask me right now, how many quarterbacks that are playing in the NFL right now, would you trust to win a Super Bowl? Usually you could say like maybe 6 or 7. I could think of right now maybe 3. That's not a lot. And there's some other teams, not counting injuries, but going into this season, there were just some teams that just have bad quarterbacks. There's a lot of teams in this league where the quarterback talent goes from average to atrocious. And then you've got Brady and you've got Cam and you've got, yes, half the jury's out on Andy Dalton, but they are 9-2. And
oh God, you can't put him.
No,
in
you
that
can. That's my point. You can't. No. You can't because he hasn't won a playoff game.
So I think the NFL is built this way. The NFL, the way the NFL is structured, what the Patriots do shouldn't be possible, right? With the hard cap and whatnot. I mean, it's built for essentially for everybody to go 8-8.
I mean, seriously, you're going to have two divisions. You could conceivably have two divisions, not one division, guys. Two divisions where all four teams could be under 500. Not one division, two divisions. The NFC East and the AFC South. You could conceivably have two divisions with four teams under 500.
So I think some of it's fluky, right? And this is what this year has been has been awful for injuries.
And that's the big
more
yes.
so.
Yep.
More so than any other year, because I mean, like if you look at the NFC East, a healthy Cowboys team is a 10-6 team at worst, mm-hmm.
yep.
right? And you know the other in Indy's not an under 500 team with Luck, right? I mean they're at least 9-7, 10-6. Yep. And you know those are two quarterbacks right there that I would trust to win a Super Bowl who haven't been playing. But
Baltimore, I mean, they got slammed with injuries.
Yep.
I mean, that's not a you know,
yep.
yeah. But if you want, if,
that's
I mean,
a
I think
playoff team.
I think the talent is there. Like, if I mean, we talk about quarterbacks who can win a Super Bowl, right? I mean, without having Baltimore, you know, an 85 Bears type of defense. Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Tony Romo, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Carson Palmer. Do you disagree with any of those?
Nope.
No, I mean, Alex Smith's in that next tier, Keith, but all those guys I just mentioned are legit number ones.
Yep.
Right? And I mean, that's almost half the league right there.
And you look, I mean, you got some up and comers too. You know, Bortles, Carr, the two guys this year, Winston and Mariota, they could end up being really good.
Right, but I think what you have though, which you haven't had in the past, is you have a lot of teams, or at least a decent number of teams that would be really that are really really good, like except for their quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, like the Jets. The Jets have an A-plus roster except for their quarterback. Buffalo is the same way. Houston is the same way. And, yeah, I mean, you just see – I mean, even to a point, Cincinnati, right? Cincinnati's kind of that way. And it's just – it's rare to find the team that has the quarterback that also has the pieces around him. Like Arizona's a team that has the quarterback and has the pieces around him. And they're 9-2.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So I want to delve more into this question. This is like a season long rest of the season to discuss this. And I definitely want senior's take on it as well. Big college football. Some big, you know, big winner teams. Tough loss for my Irish. They lost in the last play of the game to the. I meant to mute. This button's getting weak. The Stanford Cardinal. Clemson. Alabama, Oklahoma, and Iowa are your top four teams. Michigan State lingering at 5, which obviously means that this coming Saturday night's Big Ten championship game at Lucas Oil between Iowa and Michigan State, that's pretty much an elimination game. Winner is in. Clemson plays North Carolina in the ACC championship. I think I like the Tigers in that one. Alabama, Florida in the SEC championship down at the Georgia Dome. I don't see Alabama losing that game. I honestly don't. And then Oklahoma's season's pretty – they're the only one that's set. They've already finished their season. My one thing – and we'll get more into this on next week's show when the conference championships are done. I would like to see – because everyone's been bitching and moaning about Iowa's crappy schedule, which is really not their fault. And the whole thing of teams' schedules is really starting to piss me off now because I'm sick and tired of this conference room full of college presidents, lawyers, doctors, accountants, bankers, whatever the hell they are. Telling teams that their schedules are not great. You know what? Schedules are based on the conference. And if the Big Ten didn't have so many crap teams in it and had to have two divisions, then poor Iowa stuck in the division that all they have is Nebraska and a bunch of bums, while Ohio State, Michigan State, and Michigan are all in the other division. Not Iowa's fault. That their one good win, you know, that you could give them credit for is Wisconsin. But if they're the only ones that finish unscathed, let's say North Carolina upsets Clemson, everybody else wins, and Iowa's the only undefeated team left after the weekend. I'd like to see that playoff committee have the balls to put Iowa at number one as the only undefeated team. I'd like to see them have the balls to do it. They won't because they're a bunch of cowards, but I'd like to see them have the balls to do it. We'll talk more about the college playoff next week after the conference championship games this weekend. In the NBA this week, going on at the moment, Warriors are 20-0. Meanwhile, the Sixers and I could be happily say this because another one of my teams that's unbelievably terrible is my Lakers, who actually lost to the Sixers last night. So they handed the Sixers as Kobe begins his farewell tour. And we'll talk more about Kobe as the season progresses. They had a lead and they blew it. And they lost by like 12. So the Sixers finally have a win. They played the Knicks tonight at the Garden. We talked about boxing off air, Cowboy. We talked about the Canelo Cotto fight last week that Canelo won in a decision. But big upset in boxing this past weekend, huh?
Yeah. Tyson Fury, big talker from England, lifted the heavyweight strap, the lineal heavyweight title from Vladimir Klitschko, who had 19 defenses in a row. So that's a big upset. For anyone who watched the fight, it was a cure for insomnia. It was awful. It was a really, really bad fight. Klitschko is going to be 40. He just didn't let his hands go. It's not that I don't want to take too much away from Fury, but it's not that he fought a great fight. Klitschko was just completely inactive. Just didn't throw punches. And kind of the same thing has happened to other great fighters as they've gotten older, as they have trouble letting their hands go. And that's what you saw with Klitschko here. Not a scintillating fight at all. I hope they rematch and Klitschko at least goes for it a little bit. I mean, it seemed like it took him 8 or 9 rounds to get going at all.
The last two rounds, if he would have fought at the beginning of the fight like he did round 11 and 12, he probably would have won that by round 5.
Oh, definitely. I mean, because he's the better fighter, you know? Yeah,
right.
He wasn't fighting. I'm happy you watched that, Keith. And, Fury's a character. I mean, I think Fury's good for boxing. He sang Aerosmith, Don't Wanna Close My Eyes in the ring after the fight, which was pretty awesome. And he's a big weirdo, but I mean that's the kind of big personality boxing needs. And you know, the rematch will be big over across the pond. It really speaks to how poorly Klitschko fought that he lost the decision. Where it was in Germany, and while Klitschko isn't German, he fights most of his fights in Germany and consistently sells out their soccer stadium stuff. He's a huge draw there, and in Germany is notorious for hometown decisions. And you know, it was pretty clear that Fury dominated the fight. And I thought there was at least a 60% chance they were going to give it to Klitschko anyway. But the judges had it actually pretty wide for Fury, which shows, again, just how poorly Vladimir fought. So
I was getting nervous at the end. I thought they were going to disqualify him for those little rabbit punches he kept throwing.
Right. Yeah, they took a point. Tony Weeks is a good referee. But, yeah, it was not scintillating stuff. It was the kind of thing, it was like Mayweather-Pacquiao, where like if you were someone who's not into boxing, who just tuned into that fight, you would walk away and say, I'm never watching another boxing match again.
But the question is, Cowboy, is Tyson Fury as popular across the pond as pretty Ricky Conley is? I doubt.
I don't even know who that is.
The fighter at Creed.
I haven't seen it yet, man.
I haven't seen it yet.
Don't
Pretty
don't
Ricky Conley.
Well,
he's just a fighter in the movie. That's all I'm saying.
Who put you? Hey, oh, and so one other thing on fighting. We'll talk more about this next week. But December 12th, Saturday, Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo. Huge UFC fight. I can't wait to break it down next week. And there's also a great middleweight title.
I like McGregor.
Fight on that.
I like McGregor. He's one of those mouthy ones. He's kind of like I look at him, and of course I'm going to use a wrestling reference. Every time I see him, he reminds me of Sheamus. Obviously, he's a better fighter than Sheamus, but
he's very good. Aldo is generationally good, but hasn't fought in a year, so it's really interesting. I'm going to save my prediction.
Okay, we'll talk about it next week, guys. Awesome job this week. Next week on the show, we will talk NFL again. We'll prepare you for Week 14 and see how the weekend went. Can the Packers rebound? How about the Texans, Vikings? A lot of big games for a lot of Giants. A lot of big games for a lot of teams this week, and we'll see the point spread. PC with a big win this week after the good weekend they had out on the West Coast. They beat Hartford tonight. We'll get more into college hoops once conference schedule starts. And we'll talk, again, we'll get into college football as the conference championship games happen this coming weekend. We'll see how the playoff shakes out there. Will Clemson stay undefeated? Will Iowa stay undefeated? For Cowboy Senior, Schmitty, I'm Scott. This is the Sports Evolution. Hop on the train. It will not pass you by. Have a good week.